Hello, one and all, and welcome to 2021's Let's Talk Pride. I'm James Steventon. I use the pronouns he and him. I'm pansexual, which means I'm attracted to people regardless of gender, and I am your host as ever. Now, this year, I've got seven fabulous queer creatives who've agreed to sit down for a little Zoom chinwag to talk all things queer. And this year's topic is acting queer. What it means to be a performer and queer in today's industry. So, without further ado, let's zoom on over to that chat. So, hello everyone. Can I just start by saying a massive thank you to all of our guests today on behalf of Bamlam Productions. It's a huge honour to have you all here with us, especially during Pride Month. So, I think the best way to get this started and kick it off is by introducing our amazing guests to you. So we'll go round and we'll start with Paul.
Hello, my name's Paul, Paul Anthony. My pronouns are he, him. I identify as a gay man. And I'm a Manchester-based actor, writer, producer, leopard print enthusiast. Just trying to make a living doing this, succeeding and failing in moderate amounts. That's me.
Michelle.
Good evening, everyone. So I'm Michelle Parker. My pronouns are she, her. I identify as a lesbian. I'm an actor and more recently a director, and I'm just dabbling in producing. I've set up my own company with two blokes called Three Chimneys Entertainment, and we're hoping to make a start on a feature film soon. I have no idea what I'm doing, but we're getting somewhere. Little bit of success as an actor, so I'm really pleased about that. Been acting only a couple of years. I've been a nurse for most of my life, and it's great to be here to chat with like-minded people.
Yes, and so glad you're here. Ian, over to you.
Hello, so my name is Ian Kay. I identify as he, him. I am a gay man. A bit about me. Graduated Our North in, I think it was 2019. Had about 6-7 months in the industry, that then I think COVID hit and then everything kind of went really quiet. Recently, things have been kind of picking up and it's nice to kind of get out there, you know, have meetings with different casting directors, and just to kind of make those connections again. I'm also a volunteer at the vaccination centre, so I give out the injections to the public, which is a really good and rewarding job.
Molly, over to you.
Hi, I'm Molly. My pronouns are she, her. I am a bisexual woman. I have been performing since I was tiny. And that kind of led me on to do my undergrad in drama, graduated in 2017. And then since then, I've been running a theatre workshop company, using theatre to educate young people on all forms of theatre, and also using it through a PSHE perspective. So we do workshops on bullying, LGBT stuff, and I'm an LGBT youth worker as well.
So cool. Ashley.
Hiya, I'm Ashley. I use they, them pronouns. I identify as a non-binary black femme, in that order. And a mouthful already, isn't it? I'm just kind of an actor, poet, writer person. So I'm in acting training right now, doing my second MA. And yeah, I just do a lot of poetry.
What was your first MA in, Ashley?
Psychology in education.
I've literally just started my psychology master's as well. That's so crazy.
So good. I love it.
Wild world.
Yeah.
We'll hear more from Ashley later on. Patrick, over to you.
Hi, I'm Patrick. My pronouns are he, him. I identify as a queer male. And a little bit about me. I think Paul stole some of my stuff because I'm also a leopard print enthusiast.
Yes.
But I'm from Yorkshire originally. I moved over to to Wigan to go to drama school, actually with Ian. So just to confirm, it was 2019 that we graduated.
We love validating facts.
And then, yeah, and then I kind of love it on this side of the Pennine. So I've stayed in Manchester since I graduated. And yeah, I'm a queer artist, creative and actor.
And last but definitely not least, Jude.
Hiya, I'm Jude Leith. My pronouns are they, them. I identify as a non-binary, gender-fluid, queer person. I'm an actor. I'm coming up to my end of my second year at drama school at Alra North. I'm a singer. I'm a writer. I'm a poet. I perform spoken word while wearing makeup and ranting about Catholicism and gay sex. It's great. And I just have a laugh, really. Camp is everything.
And I think that sums us all up, and what a great year this is for this pod. Massive welcome to all of you. I'm so excited for this. So let's dive straight into it. As I've previously said, this year's theme is acting queer, talking to queer performers about what it's like to be a queer artist working in the industry in 2021. And when I came up with this topic, I knew that there'd be so many different experiences depending on who we talk to. And I'm well aware that my own experience has been quite privileged. I know that although I've never felt fully accepted for who I am as a queer performer, I've never felt threatened or vulnerable in theatre spaces, certainly since graduating. And I'm going to do a Ian now and try and remember, I'm pretty sure it was 2017, so I've been out a while now. But let's open this up to the group. Has anyone ever felt unsafe in an art space before? Go on, Paul, I can see that hand reaching.
I don't know if I want to class it as unsafe, because I think unsafe is probably too big a word to describe it. But when I was at uni, obviously I'm a camp man in leopard print, it was sort of drilled into me that if I was going to achieve any amount of success, it is going to have to tone the fuck down. And then because when you're 18, 19, wanting nothing more than to act, these people who are supposedly the gatekeepers, you think, oh, they must be telling the truth. So whilst I was at uni, a lot of it was like, tone it down, tone it down. Tone it down. And I didn't really think anything of it whilst I was at uni. I ended up leaving uni before the end of my second year anyway, so I never graduated. But when I then went out into the world and started auditioning, it was like anytime I got to present as the real Paul, and I got to audition for roles that were camp and bitchy and just me, I had a brilliant audition and 9 times out of 10 get the part. And then anything else where it's like, okay, this is an audition that I need to tone down on now, I ultimately never got the part and also had a miserable audition. So I think, I don't know if I want to say unsafe, but I definitely felt earlier on that being me wasn't going to get me work. And if anything, being me has gotten me more work. I've never ever booked a job not being me.
I'm exactly the same. I used to, and I think that's a problem with a lot of training. I think we spend so much time on listening to these people who, especially if you come out of school and go straight into higher education, I think you listen to these people who you meet and you're like, oh, they're the be all and end all, like the font of all information. And then as soon as you leave, you soon find out that actually audition rooms are quite friendly and quite, and they want to see you and not this carbon copy of every other person that's trained at that school.
And I've also never been told by anybody other than them to tone it down. Like if I go to an audition and they give me feedback, it's never, that was camp, don't do that again. It's always just like, on this line, could you just be a little bit angrier? And I'm just like, it's got nothing to do with this, has it? You just lied to me.
Good direction. Michelle, you're nodding along at that. Have you experienced the same?
Same as you, really, James. I've never really had an issue in this, in the acting world. People have been really, really accepting. But if I relate it back to another career that I have running alongside, I go back years and I have conversations with managers who have tried to go for a promotion. And it's like, yeah, but she's got a child and a husband. So we've kind of looked at her. And that's quite Neanderthalic, really, isn't it? But I can kind of see the layers that we're up against. It's very, very interesting. But same as you both, just be yourself, because the better self-tapes and the better auditions are when I've just been me.
Totally. And yeah. I want to open this up to Jude and Ashley, because you're both still in training. Have you experienced anything like this? Have you, especially at drama school, and we know quite a lot of big changes happening in British drama schools at the minute around race, about sexuality, a massive shake-up. What have you guys felt?
For me, I don't think it's necessarily issues with drama school, but it's more I'm at this point now where I'm going into the industry. And as a trans person, and we've got to start focusing on spotlight and promoting ourselves, and I suppose now within drama school, my identity's been embraced, but it's just taking that new step, and the fact that on Spotlight, just to even sign up, I've got to misgender myself to then say that I'm non-binary. And there's like, where is that conversation? But then at the same time, as someone who's non-binary, who physically presents as male, I still want to go for male castings, but how do I have that conversation with people who are just scrolling through Spotlight and they want to just see male person, but if they see a non-binary person, are they going to go for that casting?
Yeah.
And
it does feel like a slow change, doesn't it? I mean, I think we get lost in, everybody sees that specifically big platforms like Spotlight, if we see that they've made this huge change by adding non-binary to the list, but then you forget that there's still people that it's not representing. That's a really cool point. Ashley, what about you?
Yeah, I think it's safety and safety and prejudice running along similar reflective lines, but obviously they're not the same. You know, I feel like my experience in like the performing arts world or industry or whatever has been okay so far. Like I have a trans mentor who's done things around the UK and abroad now. And, you know, I went to them like, it's not sexuality that they stumble on. It is gender, I think, because that's still the wave we're in right now. And I you know, said to my tutor, you know, even if I tell them my pronouns and tell them, have these conversations before I go in a space, will I still be misgendered? And they've been doing it for like 20 years. And they said, yes, you will.
It's crazy, isn't it? And it, for me, it goes back to listening. Like I've always said, I've not got a problem with anyone who misgenders. It's the repeated aspect of it. Like everyone can make a mistake. I do it and I have to correct myself, but you acknowledge it and you move forward. And if somebody told you they were allergic to nuts, you wouldn't go and take peanuts and force them in the face, would you? So why are we doing it with gender? That's a really good point, Ashley. Ian, I'm going to come to you really quick, because what Ashley's just said leads on to my next point really well. So wrap this up for us, if you can.
Okay, so I was just going to say, it wasn't almost made me feel kind of, it wasn't uncomfortable or anything like that. It was part of my training, and I love my training, and, you know, where I graduated, and I had a great time. There was just some points that it was I received quite insensitive comments. And I can remember having a one-on-one. And when I started drama school, I had kind of a list with my SAT, especially my S sounds. And I was actually having a one-to-one. And one of the tutors turned around and said to me, oh, you've got a list because it's the gay thing. All the gays have the lists. She was like, so, and then, in a way, that made me almost like, oh, so does that mean I can never play a straight character? Does my voice automatically fit into this stereotypical view of, oh, he's queer, he's a gay man? And then I started to think, does that limit my roles? Does that mean that, oh, he's gay, he sounds gay, so we're only going to give him gay roles? And all of that. And I still remember it now, you know, and I still, when I go up for roles, it's in, still in the back of my head. And I suppose I found it quite hurtful, and it wasn't a kind of a target on me. It was just something that I felt was a little bit insensitive, and it could have been handled better.
But again, that perfectly leads me onto this. We've all kind of expressed ways where we felt uneasy or unsafe. Where have you been as a performer and you felt seen and totally at home as you, as a queer performer? Go to Molly.
I think for me, it's definitely been around performances that have either queer characters in or performers that are maybe gender blind and have openly things. I think so. One of my absolute favorite musicals at the moment is Six. Mm-hmm. And I think the thing that really draws me to that is that it's one of the casting creatives is non-binary. They've said countless times that they will openly gender blind cast the roles. Like, if you can sing the role, you can have the role, kind of thing. And I think we're seeing more musicals now, like The Prom and the Broadway show, not so much the movie, that are making young queer people feel safe. And I think being surrounded by queer people, I think a lot of people have the perception that a theatre is a super liberal space, and it is, but not necessarily mainstream theatre. It's more, you know, you think of like drag theatre, and I'm from Blackpool originally, so going to Funny Girls is like one of my safest places in the whole world, because it's just, it's that being around queer energy. I'd never how to support, like, describe it, but when you're around fellow queer people, there is that, like, I feel my shoulders relax a little bit, and I don't feel the need, because I know I'm not going to have to, like, defend myself.
That's a huge thing, isn't it? The need to always be on guard, to have to educate somebody else when it shouldn't be your job all the time.
Yeah, I think especially, like, my background is from education, and so I consistently have friends who are teachers or ring me up and say, got a non-binary student in my class and I don't know what that means, can you help me? And I kind of want to turn around and say, I'm more than happy to help you. You can also Google it. There are also many a resource.
Yeah, do work yourself.
Yeah, but I think especially, like, there was someone mentioned earlier about, like, comments that were said that maybe aren't outright offensive, but there's the undertones. I remember when I was training, doing my undergrad, and they were figuring out, and I had someone turn around and say, oh, your casting director's dream, being bisexual, you'll kiss anyone of any gender. I was like, that doesn't necessarily make a difference, but also it is those comments underneath that, like, it's not meant as outright offensive, but it is at the same time.
Yeah, totally. Ashley, you've got your hand raised. Go for it.
Yeah, I was just, I do this. I go to answer questions and instantly forget what I was going to say. Big ADHD brain. Oh yeah, that was it. I think it's really interesting, this idea of a safe space as, like, you know, a Black, queer, trans person, because you could have all the queer spaces in the world, but that doesn't guarantee safety for someone who crosses the intersections I do, which I think the question of where do I feel, like, most safe or, like, most at home is really interesting, because, like, queer people are kin, you know, they're my chosen community. But, like Molly was saying, there's also that thing of the burden of education. And when you intersect in so many ways, you become that person. And it's like, it's okay. And there's a difference between it being with, like, do you know, community and the people you want to have relationships with, and when you're, like, stepping into a theatre and you're having to gently remind them about something that's intrinsic to you every time.
I think I actually enjoy that challenge. Is that a challenge? This idea that sometimes I will be in rooms, not so much all the time in terms of, like, in theatre spaces, the chances are I am not the only gay in the room. But, like, if I walk down my council estate, you know, me and my partner are one of very few gay people in the village, but no one. So I'll go out in, you know, Cuban heels, a leopard print shirt, a fur coat, glasses, dressing like, you know,
something low-key, Paul.
Something low-key, yeah. Just to get some milk. But I remember every night, like, my mum said to me, like, do you get shit on the street for it? And I'm like, sometimes. And she was like, well, why'd you do it then? I was like, because A, it's what I want to look like going out. But then also I think sometimes if I don't see, because I don't see people dressed like me all the time. So I'm thinking there will be other people that see that and either think, oh, maybe I can wear what the fuck I want then. He's walking, he's buying a pint of milk in a fur coat. why can't I do that? And then also some people are threatened by it. And it's like, good. You good. If you're threatened by a coat, then you've got some, you know, issues that you need to sort out at home.
So true.
But I think if you're going into a space and you are the only sort of, you know, the only queer male, or at least queer in a sense that you're out there and you're very visibly presenting, this is me, or if you're in a space and you're the only trans person, you're the only non-binary person, I think it's important, you know, obviously with issues of mental health and obviously being safe, you do have to sort of be careful where you choose your battles. But I think sometimes it's important to go, I'm here. This is who I am. I am not special. I am one of many, many other people. I represent one of many other people within this community. Yeah. Accept it. Here it is. Here I am.
Yeah.
And if you don't like it, then that's your problem, but I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah, I think that's hugely important, especially like you say, in spaces where maybe queer artists or just queer people in general aren't represented. If you've found your way into that space and you've got a platform and you can use your voice, my God, use it, educate people. The thing that really drives me up the wall is I wish people had just asked questions sometimes and just query things and run it by you. And actually, half the time we could eliminate these really hostile confrontations. So that's what I'm going to ask you. What is the one question that you wish people would ask you as a queer person? Michelle, I'm going to come to you.
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because I was actually just going to bring in something very similar. What's really exciting for me is, and what makes me feel safe is having that conversation with an individual and finding out who they are, what they are. And it's so exciting to hear their experience alongside my own. I think we've all got a responsibility, and it might be my old fashioned head, a responsibility to role model that as well. So if we're showing respect and we're having those conversations and seeing them as exciting, we're halfway there. And we're always going to have a small cohort of people that are not accepting, that are making us feel unsafe. But it's about minimising that as much as possible, isn't it?
Yeah, totally.
So for me, it's about keep having those conversations and saying, who are you? What are you about? But that person answers what they want. So there's no pressure either.
It's that, isn't it? No pressure. It's not an invasive one. The one that bugs me at the minute is the question around trans people is always, have you had the operation? Well, that's nothing to do with you. Why don't you ask me something more interesting, like how have I found my transition so far? I just think it's really weird that we go straight to genitals. It's strange. Patrick, what about you? What's the one question that you wish people had asked you as a queer person?
It's kind of difficult to think of one particular question, I guess, that I would like. I think, similar to Michelle, if there was just a wider conversation about it. Yeah. I mean, you ask me the questions, this probably speaks a lot about the experience, I guess, a lot of queer people have in life, not just in the creative industries. But, you know, I can think of 10 questions I wish people wouldn't ask me. And again, just going off your point, it's generally always the kind of the sexual stuff, the stuff that, you know, is part of life, but is kind of also, you're a human, aren't you? And you're 3D and you've got a wealth of other experiences and things that inform your life. And I was actually just having a conversation with my boyfriend earlier today about, I suppose this is going off topic a bit, but it feels relevant, how it frustrates me as a queer person who is involved in creating queer art and wants queer stories of a magnitude to be told, that a lot of the ones we see are A, predominantly about gay men and not the many other groups that make up the community, but then really sexualized, usually with a specific body type, usually with a lot of sex scenes that, yeah, you know, sex is a part of life for many people, not for all people, but for many people. But also, you know, where are the stories about the gay or queer or trans or non-binary people who want to have children or a
the
certain
happy ever
career?
After. I feel like the happy ever after is always missing from gay stories. We're always the victim. We always come foul of some wrongdoing, and it's never, yeah, it's never a really positive message. Molly, what about you? Jump in.
I think one thing I always wish is people would acknowledge that it's not something that's age inappropriate, because I think a lot of time people view things that are queer as adult, even boiling down to the government release guidance in 2020 around education in LGBT relationships and how sex and relationships education is now compulsory in all schools. And it's also compulsory that that include education around LGBT relationships. However, there's one line in it that says education around LGBT relationships is to be done at an age that the school deem it appropriate. But that's only in there about LGBT relationships and no others. Yeah. You know, we see so many kids cartoons and things like that that are lacking any form of LGBT representation because they don't want to shove it down kids' throats. But actually, when you go into schools and talk to kids and say, oh, this person uses they them pronouns, they kind of go, okay, because they're kids. And, you know, especially as an educator, if you tell a child something's true, they'll go, okay, yeah, makes sense. I can see that.
That's true. And I remember reading something where I think it was actually sort of like a viral video where they turned around and said, no child is born homophobic. No child is born a racist. It's a learned trait. Yeah. And yeah, that totally tracks, Molly, totally. Final question before we move on to our next section. What is one misconception about you as a queer person that you wish that you could clear up for all time? And I'm going to start with Molly.
I think for me, it would be the fact that bisexual people are hypersexualized and overly promiscuous. I think that would be the number one, the fact that people often presume that bisexual characters will... or bisexual people in general, because of what we see in bisexual characters, will be dating multiple people and things like that. I think back to the first time I ever saw the word bisexual said was in the film Dodgeball. And at the end, the main character goes and kisses a woman partner and then like, oh, you're a lesbian. And she goes, oh no, I'm bisexual. And then she kisses the main guy character. And it's like, okay, so she's bisexual and she's polyamorous. Those things aren't interchangeable. And that was the first time I ever heard the word bisexual on TV. And even looking at bisexual characters in theatre, like Maureen from Rent, she's overly promiscuous, she's hypersexualized. It's such a common stereotype that I just would quite happily put in the bin.
Yeah, that's an amazing one. Michelle.
That was really, really good and very, very detailed. Mine's a very simple one that if that's I fine. Heard any shorter people say I'm butch, I hate the word.
Love it. Yeah, butch is, and it's thrown around so like readily, isn't it? So true. Ashley, what about yours?
I was just laughing because mine like is a kind of like the flip side to what Molly said. So I am polyamorous and have, you know, more than one partner. But the thing with that is that people think it means I have a lot of sex and then also sex outside of those partners. And sex even within those relationships. I think it's just, you know, you say polyamorous and non-monogamous and you get sex and then you get jealousy. And it's like, well, but that's maybe that's like your issue.
Yeah, that's all you can
that's you.
Yeah, that's you. Ian, over to you.
I hate the word and I get it a lot, but I just find it quite offensive when someone calls me cute because I feel like they're calling me like a fat fluffy cat or a flat fluffy kitten. So when someone goes to me, oh, you're so cute, and I'm like, is it because I'm 5'1"? do you just want to squeeze my cheeks? Because I've had people squeeze my cheeks sometimes and like pat me on the head and they're like, oh, you're really cute. And I'm like, no, I'm like a 30-year-old man. Probably old enough to be your dad.
Yeah, but, please don't touch me.
Yeah, and I think the misconception, you know, that's something that really kind of gets to me. And the fact, I know Patrick mentioned earlier on as well, is when you do come out, or when you do, you know, I'm gay or to friends or whatever, it's always, it always turns into something so sexualized. It becomes about, so who's the bottom, who's the top? You can never really have just a civil kind of conversation, and it kind of automatically go into something like that. I mean, I'm comfortable talking about that, but when it's the first thing on a conversation, you're like, that, you know, I'm not just about that.
Yeah, like I joke with my friends all the time. We have like top bottom jokes all the time. Yeah. I've got a friend who I adamantly call a top, even though he's verse, but we joke that he's a top and that, no, don't try and be a bottom, it's not gonna happen. But that's our joke. Like, you don't come into the conversation going straight for it.
I was just gonna say, with what you said, the misconception as well, I think, because people think you know, shorter, oh, he's the bottom, so he's definitely, you know, that misconception of everyone thinks, oh, you know, he must go for really tall people because he must want to be like, you know, thrown around the room or something. Like, really?
Well, Ian, thank you for coming out as a top. It's been a privilege to Paul, what about you?
For me, a lot of the people that I've worked with, both in like pubs and cafes and or in theatre spaces, because of the way I dress, the way I speak, because my humour is usually very dry, sort of in a very stereotypical, the bitchy gay. I think a lot of the times when I've gotten to know people, they eventually let forth at some point, I thought you hated me. I thought I didn't really want to speak to you because you intimidate me. And then when you find out, well, what about me intimidated you? And then they just sort of list everything about you. It's like, well, you know, you wear this, and then you know, you're 6'3", but you still wear big heels on your boots. And it's sort of like, that shouldn't intimidate you. Yeah. None of those things should intimidate you. I'm just being me. I'm not mean. Yeah. You know, I don't meet people the first time and go, you're fat. You know, it's, you build up a rapport with someone and then you eventually slide in those bitchy jokes.
But I like, make it about you though, that it's your fault.
Yeah, you have intimidated me, and it's no, you have been intimidated by my presence, and
I'm a lovely person.
Yeah, I'm fine. So I think a lot of the time it's, you know, not to pigeonhole people, but a lot of the time it is straight people who don't come into contact with a lot of queer people, or just a lot of different people. It's like, because it's sort of irrelevant of the fact that I'm gay. If I was a straight man in leopard print, in a fur coat, massive statement sunglasses, it still shouldn't intimidate you. It's their clothes. It's not a weapon.
Yeah.
It's just, they're just clothes. So it's sort of, a lot of these people, maybe you should look at yourself and sort of figure out why you're intimidated by someone who is effectively just choosing what they want to wear.
Jude, what about you?
I suppose a common misconception I have is that I'm a very masculine straight male. No, I'm kidding. I get a lot of the time because I wear makeup, and I fully blame the, I suppose, the massive influx of popularity that RuPaul's Drag Race has had over the last few years and the relentless seasons that we've been getting. But I always get, because I wear makeup, oh, you should try out for Drag Race. Oh, you'd be an amazing drag queen. And I'd be an awful drag queen. I'd be actually horrendous. But then as well, because I'm also an actor who wears makeup, I get a lot of the time, oh, you should do panto. And I'm like, is my makeup really that bad?
Please don't tell me that. I love that. Well, as a drag queen, I'd like to say, I think you would make a lovely drag queen. But for reasons of being fabulous rather than just but yeah, I completely agree with you. I often find that I get, as a drag queen, I get told, oh, so you're transitioning then, do you want to be a woman? And in fact, I've got my nails painted at the minute, and I teach at a stage school, and one of my kids came up to me the other day and went, do you want to be a woman because you paint your nails? And I went, no, I just paint my nails because I'm fabulous. And the kid stood there in silence for a second and went, "That's cool." And I went, "It's just me being me." And I think out of everything that we've said, each of us tonight, I think being ourselves, I think in spaces like that, that's why it's so important. I've not come to Patrick yet for this question, have I? Go on, Pat.
Yeah. For me, I guess the one misconception would be that within queer relationships, there has to be, for monogamous queer relationships at least, with two people, there has to be one person who is the man and one person who is the woman. And it drives me nuts because I'm like, don't come over here and project your heteronormativity onto me.
Yes.
Like, we don't exist like that. We're both men, or we're both women, or we're both non-binary, or whatever it is.
We've evolved beyond your straightness.
Well, this is it. I'm like, I see the hard time, particularly that trans and non-binary people get so often, but I'm like, but then you hear comments like this all the time, and you're like, well, so much of society feels so repressed. And it's like, you're not ready to have that conversation because you still view relationships as these very two-dimensional things where one person has to have a certain set of attributes and the other has to have a certain set of attributes.
Isn't it? It's ludicrous.
I was going to say, my favourite thing in reference to that is there's an image that has a pair of chopsticks and a knife and fork, and it's the people asking the chopsticks, so which one of you's the fork? And it's like, do you now realise how silly that question is?
I've never heard that before. That's amazing. Oh, Molly, so you can have to send me that. That's incredible. I need to see that. Ashley, go on then.
I was just going to respond to something Paul said.
Oh, do it. Go for it.
Do it. Okay, I'll do it. I'll just go for it. yeah, just the thing about like being intimidating because of how you dress as well. I find that occurs a lot for me with being not white as well. You know, have people like months after meeting me going, I thought you were just so intimidating. And you just say, well, why? And it's always that they just search for something, don't they? Whether it's your coat or maybe you frown when you think that was mine. And then they said like, well, I've had it a few times.
Yeah.
But, then I saw your pink dungarees and then I thought, maybe you're not that scary. Like, yeah, okay.
Sorry, so I'll just wear my pink dungarees all the time just for you.
All the time.
Madness. That leads me on to our most exciting part of the evening. Here we go. So our game for this year, we all know we love a Let's Talk Pride game, and it is Name That Queer Quote. Insert dramatic music now. So what I need you guys to do, and you listening at home can do it as well, is get a pen and paper or something that you can mark your points down, and I want to know how many points out of 10 you get for this quote quiz. So these are quotes, it's dead simple, from queer people or queer allies, and these are quotes that they have said. We're going to start with the world's most easiest one. If you don't get this, as a fan of this person, I'm going to be mortally offended and I may kick you from the Zoom. I won't, obviously. So, there can be 100 people in the room and 99 don't believe in you, but one does. Who said that? Who said that? And I will give you the one hint. It is a female and she is renowned in the world all over, and that person is Lady Gaga. Give me a thumbs up if you got it. couple of people. So yeah, that was Lady Gaga talking about Bradley Cooper, her director for A Star Is Born. Number two, I just landed back in Australia, there's your clue, and my friend rang me to tell me the Sun in London ran a front page declaring your bum a national treasure. I really did laugh at that. It's not like it can actually do anything except wiggle. So your keys are a female from Australia. Who could it be? And the answer is Kylie Minogue. Yeah, give me the thumbs up. I love it. Oh, Jude, what did you put for it? Did you get anything?
I put three question marks and then a... emoji.
Who could it be? Yeah.
Visual cues is not going to work.
It's the gold hot pants. I was like, if I had gold hot pants in there, everyone would get it.
I used to have Kylie all over my wall as a kid.
Did you? I love it.
Yeah, I used to like cut out when she was in the paper or then like do little clip outs, and I had her all every single wall.
I love it.
And then when it came to moving out, I was absolutely gutted because I was like, I don't want to take them down.
I don't want to rip them down. There's a glorious scene in Shameless, the UK edition, where Ian, who's obviously the gay character, has Kylie plastered over his wall, and everyone thinks, oh yeah, he likes Kylie, but no, just an absolute icon. Number three then. It's November the 2nd and grown men are waking up to have group discussions about a costume I wore on Halloween. And I'll give you a clue. The costume in question was the person dressing up as Nicki Minaj. This person is a rapper slash singer, to give you another little hint. And that person is Lil Nas X. Anyone get that? He dressed up as Nicki Minaj, and basically everyone on Twitter was like, oh, why is he dressing up as Nicki Minaj? And who was it? I want to say it was like 50 Cent or someone like that was really vocal about it. And yeah, Lil Nas X in his usual way was just like, get over it. Number four, as a black woman of trans experience, my position in this society leaves me really no choice but to stand for the intersectional identities I hold. Now, this is a tricky one, but I'm going to give you a really big clue. It's somebody from the cast of Pose, the absolute powerhouse series that's just finished, and I can't believe it. I've not watched it yet, but those at home, I'm sure you will have a chance to binge watch it. And that person is India Moore. Did anyone get India Moore? Yes, go on, Jude.
Does India Moore play Electra? Because I wrote Electra.
Not Electra, no. India Moore plays Angel. But yeah, I mean, I think, have you watched the series, Paul?
I've only seen the first series.
Oh, it's so good. And the representation for queer people, for trans people, for black, queer and trans people is just astounding. So definitely, if you haven't already, go watch Pose, folks. Okay, question five. While playing a famous movie character, now this one's dead easy. While playing a famous movie character from a book, this person once said, "You shall not pass." I'm not going to do my best impression of it because I think I'd blow the computer mic. "You shall not pass." I hope everyone gets this at home, because if you don't, again, like the Gaga question, be mortally offended. It is, of course, the legend that is Sir Ian McKellen, Gandalf, who also, for those who've cottoned on, there's quite a lot of Aura North grads here, or Aura people, or people around it, and Ian McKellen grew up in Wigan and was actually at Pride the other year, and I missed it. I was gutted. Next one, quite famous. If you help elect more gay people, that gives a green light to all who feel disenfranchised, a green light to move forward. And I'll give you a clue. There was a very well-known film made about this man, written by Tom Daly's husband. Tom Daly's husband. And the answer is Harvey Milk. Did anybody get Harvey Milk? A couple of people, well done. Yeah, Harvey Milk, great to read up. I've never seen the film, and it was obviously Dustin Lance Black is Tom Daly's husband. He was the writer. I think he won an Oscar for writing Milk, the film, but I really need to watch it. Okay, question seven. If a transvestite doesn't say I'm gay and I'm proud and I'm a transvestite, then nobody else is going to hop up there and say I'm gay and I'm proud and I'm a transvestite for them. And your clue for this one, this person was fundamentally important in every way for the Stonewall riots, although they didn't throw the first brick, as a lot of people wrongfully suggest that they did. Ashley's nodding along with me there. Go on, Ashley, you can reveal this one.
No, I only know the person who did throw the brick. It's completely just blank.
Who did throw the brick? Because I think that's so important.
It's called Sylvia.
Sylvia. I'm not sure. I can't remember. I think
Molly, help. Molly.
Is it Sylvia Rivera?
Yes.
Sylvia Rivera. The person we are looking for who's wrongfully associated with throwing the first brick, but is well associated with that fabulous quote, is Marsha P. Johnson. Yes, quite a few getting it there. Hopefully a lot of us got it at home as well. Hugely influential in the Stonewall riots. Question number 8. Culturally, psychologically, economically, politically, gays and lesbians are discriminated against. They are a very powerful movement, especially in San Francisco. They don't need me, but they like me. They like our organization, the Campaign for Economic Democracy, because they know that working together, we can be stronger than either entity is by itself. Who said that? This is from 1979. But this person, your clue, was quite famously arrested multiple times during protests a few years ago. She is a female. I hope those playing at home aren't Googling in this time. We don't like cheaters here at Let's Talk Pride. And the answer is Jane Fonda. Yes, go on, Paul. Anyone else get that one? Yes, Patrick. Yeah, Jane Fonda, an absolute powerhouse of a woman. I forgot what she was protesting, but she was filmed being arrested on multiple occasions. And she actually accepted an award while being arrested for something, which was totally iconic. But yeah, an absolute queer powerhouse of an icon. Question 9. We are so nearly there. This star won the Celebrity Straight Ally Award in 2015 for the British LGBT Awards and expressed his thanks in a video in which he called the honour a slightly double-edged sword. It's sad that an award for this needs to exist. It's odd and bizarre that I'm essentially getting an award for displaying basic human decency in a sort of high-profile way. I feel like a wonderful thing about our future will be that there will be nothing remarkable when a straight actor says that he supports gay rights. Who is this person? They were in a really, really, really popular series of films, The Lead. They are a male and their words might be described as magical. What could that hint be? And the answer is Daniel Radcliffe, who played Harry Potter. Yes, lots of thumbs up there from people. Yeah, Daniel Radcliffe's been a huge, huge advocate for LGBTQIA plus rights, especially in the wake of J.K. Rowling's awful stance on trans people and trans women. I thought it was amazing that he came out and, despite his obvious strong relationship with her, called it out rightfully. So amazing that he's such an ally as a straight white man again. And last but not least, going back to Jude's oversaturation of content from this person or this conglomerate, the final quote is, if you can't love yourself, how in the hell are you going to love somebody else? Can I get an amen? Who said that repeatedly for over 100 episodes now? It is, of course, the phenomenon, the legend that is RuPaul Charles. So tally up those scores. If you're listening at home, you will be able to go on our Facebook and on our Twitter now and post on the absolutely amazing thread that we've just started. Post your scores. I mean, I'm not saying that there's going to be a prize, but you might get a round of applause from all of us guys. in that comment section. Now, let's see how our lovely guests this evening did. How should we do this? Should we do a show of hands? A seven? Oh, seven from Paul. Seven from Jude. Oh, yeah, love that. Is that nine for you, Patrick? Absolutely crushing it. Ian's having trouble counting. Seven for Ian. Four for Michelle. Don't worry, Michelle. Don't worry.
What's the question? I forgot one of the questions I did for the owl. So I've got like seven out of nine. There are any other questions gone?
So Ian's making his own score list. That's fine. So if you're playing Ian's game, comment in the thread and we'll have a laugh about that. Is that nine for Molly as well? Smashed it. Ashley, how many of you? Is that a four? Ooh, don't worry. Were you doing Ian's game? Is it a four out of, or is it four out of four? Because if it's four out of four, I think you win.
I did answer Mahatma Gandhi for one, and I think I should get an extra point for that.
Do you know what? I think you do. Like, in fact, do you want two for it?
If you don't mind, yeah.
take them, Ashley. It's fine.
So that means it's a six from me.
I love it. And we'll move on to our next topic. So obviously it's Pride Month and we're fastly approaching the end. This podcast is going to be released at the end of the month, which will conclude all the festivities, or should be, should I say. But a lot of Pride has been cancelled or moved back a couple of months, a lot of the parades. How do we normally celebrate Pride and how have you celebrated it this year? Paul, I'm going to come to you because you've got the most adorable dog visiting you.
The most adorable dog that was locked out of the room and has found a way to barge her way in. I've never been to a Pride march, but I don't cope well with busy mentally.
Oh, I'm the same.
Like if a corner shop has more than three people in, I'm like, I'll just step outside and wait until this commotion and chaos has passed. Yes. So I never go to the prides. And then anytime I think, you know, there's certain costs to go to some of the events sometimes. So I'm like, I can't pay to just be stressed out. So we just sort of, when it's pride, I don't know, I suppose I don't want to sound like this trailblazer, but I'm just like, every day's pride for me. I go out and sort of be unashamedly me. If I see other people who are unashamedly them, I'm like, you know, I don't do the whole Yas Queen, but the Northern equivalent of that, I'm like, good for you.
I think that should catch on. Good for you.
Yeah. Good for you. Crack on. To celebrate it in the traditional sense, I don't tend to do that because busy and me just...
And every day is pride for you.
Every day's pride.
That's what we should live by. I live for that. Love it. Anyone else? How have you celebrated Pride this year in lockdown? Go on, Jude.
Well, this year, it's not been very Pride Month because for 18 days of Pride Month, I've been isolating. So I got put into isolation and then a week into isolation, I got COVID. It tested positive, but I'm finally free, which is great. So it hasn't been much celebrating. It's just I've been trying to watch as many queer films as possible. And that's normally what I do every year. So at least it's given me a chance to do that and time to do that this year. But I'm similar to Paul, like when it comes to going to Pride events, I can get very overwhelmed by a lot of people. Yeah. And I don't know, because I grew up in Stoke, so their Pride events always seem to rain every year. And it wasn't the most glamorous. And and being in like Stoke town centre as well, it's kind of like you're in this bubble of Pride, but then you walk outside and you've got people throwing drinks at you because you're queer, and it's not necessarily straight. The safe space. And then whenever I've like gone to Pride events outside of Stoke, I've just always accidentally joined them. Like I've been to
it
London.
It was an accident. I swear, I didn't intend to be here.
I've been to London Pride once, but that was because I booked theatre tickets. So I was going to see Kit Harington in Dr. Faustus, and my mum was going to see Kit Harington and Dr. Faustus because he's in his underwear for most of the play. So we bumped into London Pride then, and then I went to Manchester Pride a couple of years ago, but it was my friend's birthday, so we were just getting drunk and being very gay then. So for me, I suppose I've just kind of accidentally celebrated Pride, but I've started a new tradition this year where, because it's my mum's birthday in Pride Month, so I'm going to get her gifts from independent queer businesses.
That's such a good idea.
And then if I've got to get anything else that's like quite, I don't know, kitschy or any decorations around the flat, then get them from like independent queer businesses instead of conforming to rainbow capitalism. Can't speak.
We live. Well, happy birthday to Mama Jude then.
It was her birthday on Saturday.
Yeah.
My last day of isolation, so I saw her yesterday.
Yay! We love you, Mama Jude. Happy
birthday. She's the biggest
ally. We stan. Yeah, I'm just going to touch on that. I'm going to come to Ian and Ashley next. But before I touch on that, I think both you and Paul have brought up a really good point that I don't think that we recognise enough, that we don't need to go big. We don't need to, get absolutely wasted at these massive Pride events. I think having our own version of Pride at home, like you say, watching films, like going out for walks with our partners, I think that's super important as well, and just as valid as a celebration. Ian, what about you? Go on.
I mean, listening to everyone, I feel like I've been in a cocoon for my entire life, not experiencing the outside world. I mean, funnily enough, this year I'm actually going to the Manchester Pride, if it goes on. I've never been to a Pride in my life. But I've always wanted to go. And I think when I was a bit younger, I was a bit more insecure. I wasn't kind of really sure of who I was. And now I'm kind of like, want to really embrace. And, you know, if I kind of feel like I have to experience it to know if I like it or if I don't like it.
Yeah.
But in terms of what everyone else was, what you were saying, I don't do anything like, especially this month, you know, specifically, it tends to be like just really appreciating, you know, the partner that I have, the close family and the friends that are really accepting of me and, you know, my partner and boyfriend. So that's something that, you know, really kind of, I'm really passionate about. And also I've been, Jude was saying, I've been watching, there's a series on Netflix called Special.
Yes, it's amazing.
And I love it. And I didn't realise the season two has come out. So I'm like, oh my God, I just realised it before I came on the podcast. I was like, what? So I'm actually going to watch that, because the first season, if obviously you've not watched it, it is absolutely, you know, it's just incredible, you know. And I just love the whole topics that it, you know, talks about. And I think there's anything for everyone, you know, you've got such a diverse... It's such an emotional range with the show, you know, it offers the drama, it offers the tragedy. It's just a great show to watch and very easy to watch.
Ian, I love that. I love that you started that piece by saying that you felt like you've lived in a cocoon, but it like literally sounds like you're ready to burst out and become the butterfly that you are.
Yeah, and it's weird because for the past, I came out at 19 and had a relationship since I was 19 and was in my first relationship for 9-10 years. So it's only about a year ago we kind of decided we're still good friends, and we all get along, you know, my new boyfriend gets along with my ex-boyfriend, and people find it completely weird because they think we're all in a three-way, and it's like, no, three gay men can actually be friends and not be sleeping with each other. They can actually be really good friends, and it's that a misconception again, but yeah.
That links beautifully, and I'll just touch on that, on what we've said about bisexuality, the idea that actually as bi people or pan people, demisexual, however you identify, that we can't be in a monogamous relationship with one gender without having dalliances with other people. Like, it can happen, and it's the same for all queer people. We can be friends with other queer people without wanting sex. It's mad, isn't it? Ashley, over to you.
Hiya.
Hello.
Oh, that came out very Yorkshire, didn't it? Hiya.
Hiya.
Pride, yeah. So more recently, in the past Pride months, it's been pretty low-key, to be honest. When it crossed over with Solstice, a lot of my like queer friends slash chosen family are, you know, have disabilities. And it's just such an inaccessible thing, Pride. So usually in the past few years, I've waited for the parade to pass my favourite coffee shop. And then I'll join the tail end of it. And then I'll go for a bit. But usually it's just because, so it's in York. And all the schools in York now have a presence at Pride. So it is the thing of rainbow capitalism. But there's just, it's just kids. So many children and teens with their girlfriends and their boyfriends and their partners. It's just, so we just go. And I've got a trans boy who's like six, really close to me in my life. So he had his first Pride last year with his rainbows on his face and his, you know, I'm proud to be trans t-shirts and stuff. So really it's just going for that and that bit. And then we get ice cream and chill, you know, by ourselves, which is just the best way to do Pride, I think.
That's so important. I get a bit teary and I get a bit emotional when you see kids, especially young kids who are embracing the queer identity, because I just wish I'd been given the space to explore my not sexuality, my identity at that early age. Because I think, again, we've touched on it so much tonight, this idea that everything's about sex and it's not, it's you as a person and your identity. Yeah, I love that. And hey, back of the pride, back front of the pride, middle of the pride, still pride, isn't it?
It's still pride. Is that, and I obviously love it. Like, it's a six-year-old boy who feels he's just able to have these conversations. But he's been asked before, you know, people who respect the fact that he's a boy, like, so are you gay? And he's just like, well, I don't know yet, and I'll let you know when I do. And I just think that's just so amazing.
Oh my gosh. Imagine being that articulate at that age.
Oh God, they both are, but yeah.
So cool. So cool. Molly, finish us off then before we go on to our final topic.
Yeah, I think one thing that I took part in last year that was kind of an amazing thing to come out of a bad thing that all the prides kind of across the globe really were cancelled. And I was part of a team that put together a global pride celebration. And so we worked with teams from like Sydney Pride, New York Pride, North Macedonia, like all of these places.
Crazy.
And it ended up being a 26-hour live stream, but showing how different countries across the world celebrate Pride. And so we had me and my other half, we dressed up in all our rainbows. We've got a little rainbow bandana on our cat. And we just sat and watched this live stream of how Pride was celebrated around the world. And I was kind of like, I would do that over a march kind of any day, really. And it was so nice to see how people have brought this out of this negative thing that all these prides have been cancelled kind of because of COVID. But I got to see how people in Australia celebrate Pride, or in all these different places, that it was kind of like, it was the best thing about 2020, really. And then this year I have a book Instagram that does like queer books and things like that. And so I've been trying to read as many queer books as possible through Pride that have been written by queer authors or their own voices in other ways. So I've spent a lot of time indoor reading, which I'm not mad about.
Same. Going back to what I said about starting my psychology degree earlier, I've been like buried in books, but I've tried to make as many of them as I possibly can.
My master's is in sexual health, so everything is everything all queer books. I've got a bookcase behind me that, like, I've got a whole book of sex books. Again, adhering to that stereotype, apparently. And then all sorts of books, like LGBT books and things like that. So I've got my big gay bookshelf and then my fiction one, which is rainbow colour coordinated. So that's my other gay bookshelf.
Everybody needs a big gay bookshelf. I'm going to finish it there, guys. And we are running out of time. So I'm actually going to blend my last topic into our final statements from each of you. So what I'd like to ask you is, in the next 10 years, what would you like to see individually as you, what would you specifically like to see as a queer performer happen in the industry? Should we start with Patrick?
I would say that I'd really like the next 10 years to focus on all of us, but specifically trans, non-binary and gender non-conforming people, because I feel like the time has come for them to share in some of the privilege that we feel, and absolutely for their stories to be told. And just listening to that conversation before was really interesting. Ashley touched on it, but just while we talk about Pride as well, I think it's important to say that I love Pride and I always go to as many as I can, but I have a lot of trans friends who don't come to Prides because they don't feel like it's a safe space or a welcoming space for them, which absolutely breaks my heart, because the truth is, you know, I mean, it's cliche, but until we can all be proud, none of us should be proud. And that's why I'd love the next 10 years, really, in the industry, to focus on telling those stories, because it's so vital and everyday people are dying and something needs to change drastically and way more urgently than the wider population realise, I think.
Yeah, drastically, I think, is the key on that. I think huge, drastic change needs to happen. Michelle, what about you?
I echo everything that you said there, Patrick. And just to bring something in very small that's on my mind, actually, it's something that, Paul, you said about the stories that are told, that, you know, people are writing scripts and it's always about this specific thing about the gay man or this specific thing about gay lifestyle. I think I'd like to see more inclusiveness of the real life stories that aren't quite fitting into that as well. That's very exciting for me. I think that is something that we can make a difference with quite quickly and quite easily.
Yeah, definitely. Paul, go on to you then on the back of that.
I'd like to get to a point where being gay for me, and then in, you know, in relation being a gay woman, being trans, being non-binary, just stops being special. I know that sounds awful because everyone wants to be special, but just becomes normal.
Yeah.
And no one...
Like what Daniel Radcliffe said about that it'd be nice to not be an ally. It's just normal to support.
It's just like, so people don't have to come out. Yeah. People don't have to transition publicly. People don't have to make statements about it. That everyone just... For everyone to just mind their own fucking business, to be honest, and just you do you and I'll do me and then we'll all get along and it'll all be fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, where to have stories where having a gay character doesn't feel like, oh, representation. Oh, it's just, yeah, that's a gay person. Yeah, that's a non-binary person. Obviously, I think 10 years is very ambitious for that to happen.
10-year plan, but...
But yeah, just to get to a point when we're just part that much a fabric of life, sewn into the fabric of life, that it isn't new, it isn't special, it isn't something that needs to... I mean, ideally we should have been in a position where Pride never needed to happen. And obviously I understand the point, and when I say so that pride isn't important, because it will always be important, but that it isn't something that is so detrimental. Like, it has, Pride has to happen every year for people who lose their lives, for people that have lost their lives fighting for this, and to show young people, look, you're not alone, it will get better. Just to get to a point when that all just goes away and we're just, I don't know, I don't know if that was articulate enough, but just that we're normal.
It totally was. And I would really be interested in to see, I mean, it's happened in the last, well, since Pride was formed, I think we've seen it evolve and change, and it'll be really interesting to see it evolve and change again. Jude, what about you?
I think for me it's completely abolishing, and it's getting there slowly, just needs to get rid of James Corden. Not to be blunt, but this idea that playing a queer character, playing a trans character, is just for the straight white male to win an Oscar, or win an award, and it frustrates me so much, because them authentic portrayals, which is very lacking, we have it with Pose, but that's about it, and then even when we do have it, it doesn't get the praise it deserves within the awards, and awards are
and finish after three bloody seasons.
I kind of want to just stray away from everything to do with straight white men becoming themselves in a film. I want to see women, straight women, have fabulous character arcs and not be in love with a man. And then for that then to be, oh, she must be bisexual then because she hasn't explicitly shown that she has a love interest. No, she doesn't need anything. I would like to see trans and non-binary characters be celebrated, but not just in the case of in a campy Disney film, which is amazing. Like, we love campy portrayals. I think that's a big part of our culture, but just showing us as normal people and us existing in reality and existing in these realistic dramas, existing in Simon Stevens like plays, not Simon Stevens, leave us alone, but I want to show us existing, I think, in the next 10 years.
I love that. Getting to a point where we just are and we're not used as a scapegoat or anything along those lines.
But then as well, if anyone would like to cast me as a campy non-binary villain, I am fully up for it.
That is available. You can find Jude Spotlight. They are available. I love that, Jude. Ashley, over to you.
Furiously taking notes. Here is a list of my demands.
Oh my gosh, yes. Are we all taking notes?
I think the crux of it is I want to see stories for the community, by the community. I think we need to move beyond representation politics. I think people are stuck on it because we never quite got there, but now is the time that we're getting beyond it. I think having events, big events, prize, etc., facilitated by non-white people that aren't specifically safe spaces for Black people or people of colour. You know, I think that they should be able to exist and facilitate without becoming the tokenized person. You know, one Black person in the room does not diversity make. And with that, I suppose it's like there's this big rhetoric about, you know, the first Pride was a riot. And it's like, yes, and we still have rioting to do. So strap up and get in.
Yeah. You know, it's not about going out and getting drunk. It's about making a stand. I think we get that far too often.
We just need that forward motion still. And I think more immediate, if I'm going to be realistic about it, I'd quite like to see like open casting calls that don't call for trans performers and doing it in such a way that you know that any trans performer who accepts that is going to be in an immediately unsafe space. Yeah. This happens all the time. It's like someone said earlier, it's not that hard to Google. I think Molly said that.
Yeah.
Those are my demands.
I love it. Demand the space, demand the change. I think that's what we need to do though. Molly, I'm going to jump to you.
I think mine's kind of quite a simple one. I'd really like to get rid of the actor slash actress situation, like gendered awards categories. I'm aware that the reason they exist is because straight white men would win all the awards if they didn't exist. But like, if they could just not do that, we could just be actors as opposed to actor, actress. It happened with Sam Smith when people were like, oh, well, what awards category would Sam Smith go in and Demi Lovato, now they've come out? We should maybe, rather than try and fit them into a box, let's just put the boxes in the bin.
And it's always for people who aren't queer, their satisfaction. It's never for us. It's always straight people again, which is a real shame. But yeah, love that point. Oh my gosh, if we can do that in the next 10 years, the Academy Awards in 2031... Oh, watch this space, those who are listening at home. That's what's going to happen. And last but not least, Ian, no pressure. Can you bring this to a climax?
Just kind of a simple one. I feel with what, Molly said, getting rid of this idea of being labelled, how everything needs a label. Like, it doesn't necessarily need a label. I just want this, for the arts, for society, just this sense of acceptance. And, you know, if we don't understand something, take that time to research, take that time to open up. And
sorry, my ears just fell out of my ear.
I thought your ear had fell off then for a second. I was like, oh, go on.
So to take them opportunities to, you know, to have sit downs and chat with people and understand them, because I think, you know, society in a way can be very arrogant to society can be very arrogant when we don't necessarily understand something. And I feel like we all need to kind of sit back, relax. I don't know where I'm going with this, but
you're making a great point that we just need to like take a step back from it all and just realize that we're all people. Like,
yeah,
we're not that different, are we? We're all on one planet. We're all trying to get through with our own battles, our own obstacles to overcome. And yeah.
And like, we can't, and obviously we can't know everything, but I think if we take the time, I know someone mentioned earlier about, you know, you're not born homophobic. It's like a learned trait, you know, you get that from if your family are like that, you know, you pick it up as a child. I think because I struggled with the acceptance when I came out, and I came out very late. And I can remember being in a club once, and someone said to me, I don't know how this relates at all, and I was in the toilets, and someone said to me, are you gay? And I know for a fact how he said it, and I was like, no, I'm straight. He's like, good, because I would have knocked you out. So I don't know, for me, I just feel that this whole, and as simple as it is, this acceptance and not being scared, because there's times, you know, I'm a gay man, I'm 30, and I'm still scared. I'm still scared to, you know, I have a partner that I've been with for a year, and, you know, he's very, he holds my hand. And, you know, when he holds my hand, my heart is like in my mouth, because I see looks, I see people tutting, and it's hard. You know, it's hard to walk down the street sometimes and just be yourself.
Yeah. And I think that's, if 10 years can change anything, I think 10 years will change that.
Yeah.
And on that note, folks, that brings us to the end. What a beautiful way to finish, Ian. And
I mean, I just think I rambled. I have no idea.
No, you don't.
I went around the toilet seat before I got in the toilet. I could have just said it straight and then it went around.
Don't we all? No. Like, I think that's the most beautiful thing about something like this, though. We could all like sit down and practice something really articulate, but I think it's the most natural thing for us to get it off our chest to say these things that need to be said. But that is the end, folks. Can you believe it? What a ride. What a great time. I'd like to thank all of our guests this evening. I'd like to thank Paul, Jude, Patrick, Ian, Molly, Michelle, Ashley. Thank you so much for joining me. It has been an absolute pleasure. And that's it, folks. Pearls of wisdom to finish on. What a great way to end. And I'll leave you with my little pearl of wisdom, and that's be safe, be happy, and be you. Catch you soon, folks. Happy Pride Month!